So thank you very much for inviting us this evening and for all coming this evening. The chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is in the center of the evening because this chanting was inaugurated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prior to the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, already devotees were chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and some were attaining very exalted states through this chanting. But it was never widely spread and widely discovered, because around India as a whole, the focus was more on ritualistic worship. We see different trends in the development of Vedic culture or Indian culture, and we see that originally people were following the four Vedas. But the four Vedas are basically containing ritual that are worshipping various demigods. But in one sense, they do not always deal with every aspect of practical life. Whereas the Dharma Shastra deals more with all the aspects of practical life, particularly the Manu Samhita is very famous amongst the Dharma Shastra. So that is known as the Smriti, or the four Vedas are known as Shruti, and these Dharma Shastras are Smriti. Shruti is that which is heard, and Smriti is that which is remembered. So then when a class of brahmanas began to specialize in following the Smriti, they became known as smarta brahmanas. And actually smarta brahmanas became predominant all over India. So in this way, for at least 1,000 years the smarta brahmanas were having the biggest influence in all of India. And as a result is that the Vedic culture got a slant towards ritualistic activities, because the Dharma Shastras are very ritualistic. It's basically various rituals to invoke auspiciousness for life in this world. So that became the main focus. And so even in Hindu society today, we find a strong influence of this smarta culture. One can trace it if one wants. I did actually. Just a moment. I did a little research on the history of the smarta tradition, and it is said that, in particular, there were two groups of brahmanas who. A number of families who specialized in some in the south of India, and otherwise a Kashmiri Brahmana group, who were the original communities that particularly were expert in these Dharma Shastras. Then a whole contingent was invited towards South India from Kashmir. And settled there. And then the smarta community really expanded. And we can find villages, we can find family names. And from there, it spread further until also a Bengali branch of smarta brahmanas came about. So there is a historical reference of how, at one point, that influence spread all over India, which is still available today. it's interesting because we see there was a change in trend. So it's not that Vedic culture was always the same. You know. So then when the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra first got introduced, was actually as a process for self-realization in this age, as a predominant process, not just as a mantra that is part of Vedic literature, but as really a predominant process. We saw that before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we saw that Srivas Pandit took it from the Naradiya Purana. It is said that Srivas was none other than Narada Muni, who had reappeared in that form. And that Narada naturally takes to chanting the holy name of the Lord. And it was Srivas who discovered in the Naradiya Purana, the Brihan Naradiya Purana, the verse Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatira Nyata. That verse is now very famous, and that verse is now kind of often quoted by followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where it says that this chanting of the holy name is particularly the process for this particular age. Keval means only, it's the only process which really can successfully bring full realization of the absolute truth. So this Sankirtan movement was immediately meeting with plenty of opposition from those who were following smarter rituals, who were engaged in ritualistic performances for mainly karma kanda, or rituals that bring auspiciousness in this life, that give you long life, health, beauty, wealth, good marriage, and all these kind of rituals were going on. So from that background, there came opposition to the Sankirtan movement. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, then that Sankirtan movement gained so much momentum that it was just like it couldn't be stopped, and it just basically took over large areas and became very predominant. It is said that not only in Navadvip, everywhere the chanting spread, but later when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resided in Jagannath Puri, it is said the whole culture of Orissa changed completely. Just by his presence there, practically everyone became a devotee of Krishna. Krishna became the predominant deity, whereas before that was not at all the case in Orissa. But due to his influence, Krishna became the deity, and even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was worshipped during his lifetime as the Supreme Lord in various places, both in Orissa and in Bengal. So that's a little history. So the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to take shape in three places. In the Navadvip Bengali area, in Orissa around Jagannath Puri, and from there spreading all over Orissa. And the third place was Vrindavan. It was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initially personally did not go to Vrindavan. He first sent his representatives. And he sent two brothers, the two brothers, Rupa and Sanatan, to Vrindavan. So Rupa and Sanatan, they hailed from a originally South Indian, a Karnataka Brahmin family. However, that family had become very influential, and lots of land holdings had been there, and there had been a dispute amongst different family members, and one branch of the family had to basically move elsewhere and moved to the north, to a famous village named Kanjakubja. This village, Kanjakubja, is throughout Indian history very famous. It is now right next to the city of Kanpur, right, in UP. This Kanjakubja was a Brahmin village, and it was a very famous town where many, a great center of learning. So the family resided there for a while, and then were invited by royalty of Bengal to settle there, and then they moved to Bengal. But and then again moved and eventually found a residence on the eastern side of Bengal. So there, the brothers Rupa and Sanatan, along with some other family members, anyway, there they appeared. Rupa and Sanatan were extraordinary. They were like, even when they were young, they were extraordinary students, very, very erudite, outstanding. So as a result, they drew the attention of the government, because at that time, Bengal was under Muslim rule, and the Mohammedan rulers had the practice to engage Hindu ministers, because in the Mohammedan world, there were a lot of murders, political murders for taking over the throne and power and so on. Therefore, it was safer to have Hindu ministers. That was the reason why they had Hindu ministers. So that's why they were always scouting for such kind of people, and they recruited. The government recruited Rupa and Sanatan simply by telling them that the Nawab of Hussein Shah mentioned that he would eradicate the entire Brahmin community from Bengal. He would kill them all unless they would take up the government service. So that was a strong argument, so they did it in the end, and became involved in government, and in due course of time they rose to high positions in the government of Bengal. One became the prime minister, or what you call personal secretary to the Nawab, and the other a minister of finance. So they were very influential. These two brothers, they lived then like in royalty. Their village at that time was called Ramakeli. The seat of the government was known as Goda. The place Goda was about now 45 minutes drive from Ramakeli, and whatever it was on foot, a few hours maybe. And Rupa and Sanatan would commute between their village and the capital of the king in palanquins, being carried by servants dressed in royal dress, and they, in their own place, however, Ramakeli, the mood was very different. Although they were still very opulent, they had in that place made a second Vrindavan, a Gupta Vrindavan, a hidden Vrindavan. On the banks of the Ganges, they had made many cottages, and where they invited many scholarly brahmanas from all over India to come and reside. And very learned scholars came there. Rupa and Sanatan, at that time, themselves were very, very learned, not only in Sanskrit, but also in Persian and other traditions. they would daily discuss the scriptures with these various brahmanas. And it is said that when Sanatan Goswami was still young, one day he had a dream, and in that dream, a brahmana came, and that brahmana offered him a manuscript of Srimad Bhagavatam. He gave him a Bhagavatam. nowadays, okay, you know, like many devotees in our movement have a copy of Bhagavatam. It's not a big deal. Like, I have so many different sets of Bhagavatam, you know, I have electronic Bhagavatams. I have, in fact, a whole electronic library in this pocket. I have a computer with search programs, you know, where the Bhagavatam is part of it. I have a big edition. I have an all-in-one edition. I have, like, a mini edition. So, like, you know, I have a summary study of the Bhagavatam. I have study guides on the Bhagavatam. And I've got a whole book cabin, bookcase full of Bhagavatam stuff, right? Commentaries I have on the Bhagavatam. You know, there's no end to what I have, really, in terms of things related to the Bhagavatam. But in those days, it was not like that. Because in those days, many of such books and manuscripts were only kept in temples. You could get a handwritten copy made by some brahmana, but then when you speak about Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses, most brahmanas were like going for something shorter, like the Bhagavad Gita, which only 700 verses. And so 18,000, a lot of time to copy, so it wasn't like that every brahmana would go for the 18,000 verse book, you know, take a shorter book, right, handwritten copy. So there were not like that many copies around. So Sanatana Goswami had this dream that, you know, a brahmana came and gave him Bhagavatam, and he was elated. The Bhagavatam, I'm getting, that's far out. Then he woke up and it was only a dream. Oh no. You know, a real disappointment. A few hours later that day, the same brahmana arrived, and lo and behold, he presented him the Bhagavatam. So then he took that as like more than ordinary, you know. I mean, otherwise it would have been, all right, someone gave me the Bhagavatam, but now it was like something mystic, you know. Like, first it was came in a dream, and then it really happened. So it became like a very significant gift. And in that way, the Bhagavatam, Sanatana Goswami later wrote in one of his books, the Bhagavatam became my constant companion. That we can also bring back into that discussion that was taking place in Ramakeli with all these scholarly brahmanas who were together with Rupa and Sanatana having discussions on scriptures, especially based on Bhagavatam, which was Sanatana Goswami's book. So, in this way, the learning of those brothers expanded and expanded, because they basically... You couldn't imagine a better education than that, you know, discussions on finer points of scriptures in the assembly of the greatest learned scholars of their times. It is interesting when we go these days to that area, Ramakeli, we can find interesting things. We can see that there is still in Goda, the capital of the Nawab, there's still a palace, ruins of it, right? The palace of the Nawab Hussein Shah is still there. It is said that at one point Sanatana Goswami decided no longer to continue his government service. That was after his brother Rupa had already retired, and that Sanatana then was put in jail. The jail is still there today. One can visit Sanatana Goswami's jail also. That's very possible. So all that is there is some a whole history there, but we are more concerned with Ramakeli. And in Ramakeli, the interesting thing is that there in Ramakeli, Rupa and Sanatan installed deities of Madan Mohan, Shishi Radha Madan Mohan, and they also made a Radha Kund, a Shama Kund, a Lalita Kund, and a Vishaka Kund. Right? When we chronologically look at all that, then we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeli and met Rupa and Sanatana, and the date given for that is 1513 by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There's some argument on the dates, but he's a great authority. So 1513, we say, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeri, met the two brothers there, initiated them. They became his disciples. They became devotees, so to speak, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Krishna. Then subsequently, in the year after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan. And shortly after the visit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Ramakeli, 1513, Rupa Goswami retired and took a lot of wealth, many boats with wealth, back to their hometown. Then Rupa spent time there. He had many, many boats loaded up with gold and jewels and silver, which, you know, all from the government service. He kind of distributed that wealth. Well, you know, if you do that properly, you don't do it in one day, obviously, so much wealth. It took time. It took time to properly situate this one, situate that one. That's what he did. He situated all the family members and the Brahmin community, and he gave everyone what was due to them. So it took Rupa some time. Then Rupa went on the way to Vrindavan to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had just gone to Vrindavan, been in Vrindavan. While he was in Vrindavan, one of the things he did there, discover Radhakund, right, which was a pond in a field, some water, and he found Radhakund. And then he came back after a short time in Vrindavan and met Rupa on the way in Prayag, nowadays known as Allahabad. Okay, so we see this. So this meeting took place. So there was not much time after the meeting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually. And we see that all these ponds are there, a Radhakund, a Shyamakund, Lalitakund, Vishakakund, in Ramakeli, and deities of Madan Mahan, all from Rupa and Sanatan. That means they did it before they met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because after there was practically no time to do excavation of so many lakes is not a 5-minute job and can only be done in the dry season. I know, because I have actually done such things in the Bengali climate. You can only do it with low water. I have actually made ponds. It's with men digging it out. Yes, in that it takes months, and you can only do it in the dry season. So, therefore, we can understand that Rupa and Sanatan had already their own Radhakund and Shyamakund and so on in Ramakeli, even before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had discovered it. While they were still dressed as Muslims, while they were still acting as Muslim ministers, and yet they had at the same time this other life, this inner life, this life where they were connected to Krishna. Something internal, something eternal, another identity which was behind that identity that they had as ministers in the Muslim government, they actually showed like a very deep and profound level of Krishna consciousness, understanding very much about the mood of Vrindavan, which they had not yet gotten from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which only came later. So it's very interesting to see how Rupa and Sanatan were great transcendental personalities. Acharyas such as Kavikarnapur confirm that and are pointing out that Rupa and Sanatan were eternal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes said Rupa being Rupa Manjari, an intimate associate of Srimati Radharani, of Lalita, actually, and sometimes said that Sanatan is Rati Manjari, other times said he is Labanga Manjari, like that, whatever may be, they were internal associates of Krishna, who had again appeared in this world, not ordinary people. Why am I telling you all this today? Because today is the disappearance day of Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami is, well, these two brothers, Rupa and Sanatana, they both, after managed to free themselves from the government service of the Nawab. Sanatan was put in jail, but Rupa had left some money, and with money, sab chalega in India. So somehow or other, the gates opened, and Sanatan managed to free himself and dressed as a Muslim mendicant, met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Benares. Rupa met him before in Allahabad, and both received instructions, and then they were sent to Vrindavan. And there, actually, these two brothers were like the jewels. They were like, well, some of the principal personalities amongst Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers. It is said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never wrote any books. Or it is said he once wrote a book on grammar, which was thrown in the river. But otherwise he didn't write any books. He wrote 8 verses, and there's a few others that are attributed to him. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu basically instructed Rupa and Sanatan not only to go to Vrindavan, but he instructed them to write books. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Saddharma Samstapako. That he ordered them, first he explained to them the entire theology of Krishna consciousness, and then he ordered them to write this same theology down, supported by arguments from scripture. So they were like scrutinizing and researching scripture and writing. And you know, sometimes you look at these books of these Goswamis and think, how did they do all that without computers? You know, I mean, we are like sweating serious with computers, researching, you know, to pull verses together. And think, how? And like, we have search programs. So you put a book through their search program, you know, hits, so many hits, and there you go. And they had to just like read the whole book, you know. I mean, we don't have to really read the whole book. We just have to read the hits. But even that is a lot of work, right? So they had to actually read all the books, so you can imagine. But it didn't just work like that. Actually, along with Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, in Vrindavan, there was a whole community of devotees that would serve them, assist them, and bring them verses, but never would take any credit for themselves. Because they knew that these two brothers, they are the most qualified. So they were not like, in competition with them, I will try to establish my own scholarship. I'll sit on my own verses. I will publish them myself under my own name, and I will definitely not, like, you know, let anyone walk away with my work. No. They humbly offered it to these two brothers. Still, they were brilliant themselves. In this way, they wrote the fundamental works, and then later their nephew, who was a generation younger, Jiva Goswami, joined them, and he also added on more to this work. Then a few others, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he came from South India. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had met him when he was a child, and he later joined him. And he was an incredible scholar. Actually, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was the scholar in the background who did so much work. He provided so much material for all the writings of the other Goswamis. So anyway, in this way, we see that the whole literature and teachings of this movement were coming into being. And slowly, the movement of Lord Chaitanya began to take shape. Little by little, the more refined knowledge that spiritual life is not just meant for getting blessings in this life. That spiritual life is not just getting a blessing for your marriage, or that you the bank balance may be secure, or or that we worship the goddess of learning so that we can become very erudite, or worship Lord Shiva to get a proper husband, or Uma Devi to get a beautiful wife, all these things, or the earth and the horizon combined to get stability in one's post. All these kind of types of worship, Indra to get powerful in sexually, Bhumi, the earth, to get strong, strength. So, like, plenty of Surya for health. So, in this way, and oh, Ganapati, I should not forget Ganapati, who is the remover of obstacles. Ganapati, especially the Lord of the Vaishyas, who is very dear to all the Vaishyas, right, removes the obstacles. So, in this way, but, and with all respect to all these aspects of Vedic worship, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that one must respect all aspects of Vedic worship, but that ultimately the hidden conclusion of all the Vedas is something else. We find it also in the Bhagavad Gita. Because the Bhagavad Gita summarizes the Vedic knowledge, and the Bhagavad Gita gives us the conclusions of Vedic knowledge. And the Bhagavad Gita gives us Raja Vijam Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Chakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Katamabhyam. It gives us the highest knowledge, Raja Vijam, the king of all Vija, of all knowledge, and Raja Guyam, the ultimate secret. Yes. And in this way, the Bhagavad Gita opens the ninth chapter, which is called the most confidential knowledge. And in this ninth chapter, the Bhagavad Gita gives a description of devotional service, and it ends the chapter with the verse, Manmana Bhava Matbhattu Majaji Namaskuru. It explains that just bow down unto me, surrender unto me, and basically offer everything to me. Already, a few verses earlier, in verse 27, it said, Yat karosi yat asnasi yat juhusi yat asi yat yatapasasi kunti yat takkurusha madarpanam. It already said, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever, you do that all as an offering to me. So in this way, Bhagavad Gita also gave the same knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam, yes, it gave the same knowledge that kechit kevalaya vasudeva parayana, that only absorption in Vasudev, the worship. Vasudeva Praveda, Vasudeva Pramaka, Vasudeva Prakriya, Vasudeva Prayoga, Vasudeva Pravyanam, Vasudeva Parodharmu, Vasudeva Pratapa, Vasudeva Prakati. Like that. So, in short, that the end of all knowledge is Vasudeva Krishna. The end, the purpose of all sacrifices, Vasudeva. yoga, all yoga, Vasudeva. Yeah. The end of all dharma, Vasudeva. The end of all tapasya, Vasudeva, or all austerities, Vasudeva. The end of all knowledge, Vasudeva. And the ultimate goal, Vasudeva. So in this way, Bhagavatam establishes also, it's about Krishna. Yes, so Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the Bhagavatam says, Nigamakalpataru galitam phanam sukamukatam nitadrava samnitam. It is saying, Nigama means the Vedic literature. It said, of all the Vedic literature, this is the cream. It is the cream of all Vedic literature. So in this way, we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not making up his own process, but is basically basing his movement on Srimad Bhagavatam, the cream, on Bhagavad Gita. And that is the real foundation of his scripture. And then Rupa and Sanatan have taken evidence from Bhagavatam, and from other Puranas, from Upanishads, from Vedic literature, and just systematically established the worship of Krishna. And in this way, this movement has now risen to prominence. In India, of course, there are so many devotees of Krishna, hundreds and millions of devotees of Krishna. Still, the quality of Krishna worship became more refined through the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Rupa and Sanatan. Now, this Krishna worship is here, as the ultimate worship. It requires a high level of surrender, that is also speaking about the ultimate goal of life. Well, that is all based on the work of Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. Without it, we would not be able to practice Krishna consciousness. We would have no foundation to run. Meanwhile, in Bengal, there was a whole different development. Rupa and Sanatan were in Vrindavan and establishing their own school of great learning and writing books. In Bengal, nothing of the sort. In Bengal, it was Nityananda who went there with a kirtan party. And this kirtan party was something else. It was a kirtan party that would never end. And it was an ecstatic kirtan party. And it would just go on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 30 days a month. It was just continuing. And it just gained momentum. And there were these young boys that were part of this kirtan party. And it is said that at one point, believe it or not, these boys, they were just getting so fired up in the kirtan, they would just not stop. They would not even eat anymore. And they would not get weak. They would get stronger and stronger and more fired up. And at one point, they ripped trees out of the ground. Yes. That kirtan would go through all of Bengal, and it was incredible because people would disappear in the kirtan. Serious. My son, he has disappeared. No, your son has disappeared. Then the family members would go and look, and they would also disappear. And the whole village would go and look, and the whole village would disappear in that kirtan. And it was such a fired-up kirtan. Even when the grandparents came, they also disappeared. An old man would jump so high, they start to dance in the trees. Yes, they would dance on the branches, even the thin branches, and it wouldn't break. They wouldn't break. Yes, it is. And this kirtan was going on, and some of these devotees were really like something else. There was this Abhiram Thakur, and he had this whip, and if called the Jai Mangal, and if he touched anyone with that whip, they would just become ecstatic. They would just become ecstatic, and then he touched again, more ecstatic. It's like inconceivable. So they were quite. So Bengal was a whole different universe. You know, they were like very spontaneous and like just in this kirtan and in ecstasy. The philosophy was sometimes a little mixed up, so there was a little bit of, other influences, and you got all kinds of things in Bengal. You got also what you called the upper sampradayas were prominent, or, there were Vaishnavas, there were dervishes, you know, they were a mixture of Vaishnava and Muslim, right? And somehow or other, it's all mixed up, Then there were those who were in the mood like, well, aren't we all gopis? So the men started to dress up in saris, you know, like, and then on the dance in the moonlight. There were all kinds of things going on. No pictures, huh? Anyone took a picture and I see it and it comes on Facebook, you're in trouble. Anyway, the Saki Beckys, but I'm joking, but it was serious, really. Like, it's like these things were going on and they were. There was a lot of confusion in Bengal, it was from the school of Vrindavan that at one point they sent all the books to Bengal. And when these books finally reached Bengal, that's a long story which I cut short now, then they organized some big festivals, and in these festivals they distributed these books. And when these books were distributed, that's like sort of when the different schools came together, when Vrindavan and Bengal came together. But you can see it today. If you really, if you go to Vrindavan, you see that like the learning is still more on the Vrindavan side, yeah? And Bengal is still more the kirtan side. Yeah? It's like that. You know, it's still, every Bengali has a voice. You know, every Bengali can play a drum. You saw in Bangladesh, even our drummer here, he was impressed. The first night we were in Bangladesh, you know, East Bengal, and Raj played the drum, and then this local boy came in and brought a big medanga, and then he had like little extensions on sticks, little sticks on his fingers, and then he just showed him something, and he was sweating. He had to use all African power to show, and he did, you know, he did. He started like jumping around and swirl, but they jumped back, huh? Definitely. I mean, even like, you know, even, right? Even the Africans have to work hard to keep up with that. Usually, you know, it's like, give me that drum. Not in Bengal. So yes, there is that culture and that Shakti, and the kirtan still lives there. The libraries were of the Goswamis, they were in Vrindavan, and still many of them have been recovered. There's still many of the books are still there. Now there is a Vrindavan Research Institute where all that is kept. And at Radha Kunj, you still buy all the manuscripts or the books. Kavi knows very well. He knows it. I also know it. Yeah. So in this way, it came together, from Jagannath Puri, we got Rath Yatra, right? And in this way, the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took shape. We got the writings of the Goswamis, we got the Bengali kirtans, and we've got the Puri Rath Yatra, we've got Lord Jagannath, we've got the Panchatattva deities. And we saw Panchatattva deities everywhere in Bangladesh, and very common. And we got the sweetness of Vrindavan. So that is something about Sanatan Goswami. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is writing that he's saying that if one doesn't take shelter of these six Goswamis, which are headed up by Rupa and Sanatan, then one cannot really attain success in spiritual life. So it is really there where, besides their great learning, I must say one more thing, their other extraordinary quality was humility. Because without humility, learning is spoiled, you see. It is said that when a tree is full of fruits, it naturally bends down. In the same way, when a person is full of spiritual wealth, also he should naturally bow down. Yeah. So that was seen in these two brothers. They were extremely learned, but yet very humble. And that humility was the outstanding qualification for them to become willing instruments in the hands of the Lord. See, learning can be a big obstacle because it creates independence. I don't agree with that. No, no, I don't agree with that. I'm so sorry, but really, I don't agree. But Rupa and Sanatan were very transparent. Some years ago, well, as the years went by, and we came to modern time, it was Srila Prabhupada who came to the Western world on the Jaladuta, crossed the Atlantic. And on the way, he said that Chaitanya Charitamrita was his only solace. And that's what he was reading. So because he was in that mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spread this message everywhere. And on the ship there was a birthday also. There was a Janmashtami celebration. Prabhupada's birthday is the day after Janmashtami. And Prabhupada at that time, he was carrying with him a box, a trunk with Bhagavatams, and he sold Oza to the captain of the Bhagavatams. Anyway, Prabhupada came to America carrying with him some copies of Srimad Bhagavatam, which he had translated and gotten printed. This Srimad Bhagavatam, he finished it later. I mean, he had done only part of it, and later he did the rest with the help of disciples and so on. A few years ago, as devotees were studying more and more, there was a scholarly devotee who gave a lecture unzipping the purports, right? And he was like analyzing. He said, like, actually, these purports are not written by Prabhupada. They're actually based on the commentaries of the Goswamis. Yes, we say yes, 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 correct. Actually, as we're unzipping Prabhupada's purports, we're finding that they contain all the commentaries of the acharyas, and that actually Prabhupada brought us all that. Right? Little do we know where it all came from, because you know most of us have a hard time reading all of Prabhupada's books. What to speak, you know, like most of us, if we have them, they stand on the shelf, and you know, like if at least sometimes when I come and I open a book, there's a cloud of dust coming out of the book. It's not. Or sometimes they're still in the original plastic. So, you know, not as a criticism, but it's just the world of today, it's just hard to read. Where's the time? Okay? But Prabhupada brought all that.
Right.
His spiritual master collected so many things, put it all together in certain books. Like there was a book that Prabhupada used, which his spiritual master compiled, and which had commentaries of all the acharyas. Then Prabhupada incorporated all that within his purpose. In this way, by the cooperation of the previous acharyas, all that was brought to us. And in that way, we're getting the full package. The full package right here. You know, and we don't even know what we're getting. But actually, that is what we're getting. The unadulterated, unaltered message of the previous acharyas. Through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. That is something that makes this movement unique. I came to one temple and they told me there. They said that we are, you know, in our temple, in our mandir, we are changing the dress of the deity every Purnima for the last 32 years. And they were proud, you know. Every Purnima, in our temples, twice a day. Not that we are in the mood of putting anyone down. That's not it. But the real standard is twice a day, you know. Otherwise, Krishna is to be treated in a personal way, you know, as a real person. 7 offerings a day of food that is cooked. At least 2 outfits changed a day. And like that, Krishna is worshipped like a person who is present. And all that, I came to another, I'm not going to name the names, but I came to another temple, and, you know, then they give you some prasad, and you get these little white balls, sugar balls, you know, the ones that look like, you know, those. And it's like, that's it, you know? So it's like, and you go like, sabji puri chalega. Nahin, to kuch sabji puri mil jayega. Kuch nahin mil jayega. Nahin, bilkul nahin. Sabji banata nahin, puri bhi banata hai. Kuch nahin. They are not offering sabji puri, they're not offering anything. All they're offering is a little, some little white sugar thing. So, all right, you know, it's not that we are meaning to criticize it. It's nice because they are devotees of Krishna. So that's all right. But Prabhupada gave us another quality, right? Another quality, a more intimate. You know, Prabhupada gave us quality. Here is Krishna. Here is the Supreme Lord, right? And he's present with us right now in our house in the form of the deity. And we can actually look after him. Oh, what are we going to cook for him? Give him some few little sugar balls. Keep it. He likes sweets. No, he likes sabji, puri, he likes kachori, samosa, chutney, he likes all these preparations there, he likes rasgulla, he likes rasmalai, he wants kheer, he wants rabri, he wants all these preparations, right? Then he becomes purchased. And then when you serve, don't be surprised that one day suddenly he says, is there any more of that rasgulla? Who is talking? Who is talking? Who was that?
Rasgulla.
Krishna will say, yes. That all becomes possible, that miracles will happen. And that is exactly what happened in the life of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. In the Bhakti Ratnakar, it describes how all these miraculous things started to happen. That not only the worship was going on, not only that books were written, but that Rupa and Sanatana were like going through amazing things, various stories. Rupa, of course, was such a writer, such an amazing writer. So he was writing, and There's the story where he described that the hair of Srimati Radharani looked like a black snake. And he wrote it down and he gave it, he gave his reading in material to Sanatana Goswami while he was going for his bath. He said, "What I just wrote today, please have a look at it." So Sanatana Goswami was reading it while Rupa was taking baths. He said, "Oh my God, what is this? You know, I mean, how can he compare the hair of Radharani, of all Srimati Radharani, like a black snake? This is like, well, this is not right, really. I have to talk to him about this." Then later, Rupa was still not back. He sat there chanting somewhere. Then suddenly he saw these girls, they were playing with a ball or something, and then he saw one of the girls had a snake on the back, and he just called out, "Snake!" "No, look, big thing, where's the snake?" And then he said, "There, on her back." And he said, "Ah, come on, that's her hair." All the girls laughing, and then, you know. And then they just disappeared. Gone. And he realized, oh my God. So later Rupa came back and Rupa Goswami asked, "So what do you think of what I wrote today?" Sanatana said, "Oh, very nice. I like it very much. Especially that part about the black snake. I really like that." Huh? So all these extraordinary things started happening. You know, Krishna just came, brought Sanatana Goswami, was fasting one day. Krishna said, "Please, Krishna comes, the cow says, here, I brought some milk, you know." Like this, they were no longer just worshipping the deity of Krishna, they were actually experiencing Krishna's presence directly. Right? And yeah, the deity spoke to them, the Sanatana Goswami, of course. Yeah, there was, he was daily, they were living very austere. Chaktapurnam asesamamlapatishrinim sadatuchavat. So they're very renowned. They would not have a fixed residence, sleep under a different tree every night, and then begging. And they would just have these, as their meal, they have these balls of dough, you know, chapati dough, and they're sort of like, and then throw it in the ashes, you know, like these sort of like fat-like kind of, you know, rotis, like, well, not bad, you know, you can try. It tastes quite okay, yeah. Try. Anyway, so, you know, like then, there was a brahmana in Mathura, he somehow or other had this deity. He had this deity, an old deity which had come to him, and he was keeping the deity, but not in the traditional manner so much. He was just, he had some sons also, and when he was feeding his sons, he would just put them in a row, and the deity was also there, standing same, and he would feed them all at the same time, you know, feeding the deity sort of like his son. So one day, that brahmana had a dream, which where the deity told him, "Tomorrow there's a sadhu coming to the door of Sanatana Goswami, and you should give the deity to him." Sanatana Goswami also had a dream that he would get a deity. And anyway, so in this way, Madan Mohan came. So he had this big deity, you know, and he had no temple, and he didn't want to put the deity on the floor, so he just hung it in the tree by ropes. That was the altar. And then he was offering these balls. So one day the deity said, "Could I get a little salt? Some salt." Then Sanatana Goswami said, "What? You know, we are renunciants, you know. Now you want salt, you know. What is this, you know? You're spoiling our renunciation. We, you know, we cannot start like this. It starts with salt, and before you know it, it's a whole thing." No, so, so yeah, Krishna, you know, must have thought to himself, "No salt," you know. So then Krishna made an arrangement, right? And suddenly, in the days following that, it became bad weather, and there were ships plying on the Yamuna, and this big wind and rain, and this ship got blown out of its course and got stuck on the banks of the Yamuna. Now, because Sanatana Goswami had been the prime minister, everybody knew in Vrindavan, if there is any problem, Of course he's Sanatan Goswami. It didn't matter what it was, you know. I mean, spiritual, material, whatever it is, anything, any question, Sanatan Goswami, you know. So when the man was boat was stuck, what will I do? People said, ask Sanatan Goswami. You know, no problem. He went there. Sanatan Goswami said, just pray to Madan Mohan. So, okay, you know, yes, of course I'll pray. And then he said, yeah, pray to Madan Mohan and pull in this and this direction. Okay, so they did that, and then they got the boat off the bank. So he was very happy. Then he came, what can I do for you? What can I do? He said, nothing you can do for me, but you can build a temple for Madan Mohan. Right. And of course, what was in the boat?
Salt.
So in this way, Madan Mohan got his salt. That's the old story, but these were not ordinary things. You know, you heard the story 1,000 times, maybe, but it is not an ordinary story, right? Because the deity spoke to Sanatan Goswami, made arrangements like that. So yes, like this, Krishna was fully manifest to them because they were 100% pure devotees. And everyone in Bengal was talking about these brothers. When anyone would come from Bengal to Vrindavan, they said, like, they check it out, you know, what are Rupa Sanatana doing, you know what I mean? How are they eating? Where are they sleeping? Where are they going? When they would come back to Bengal, said, well, how was it? Rupa Sanatana, what? Tell me something about Rupa and Sanatana. What about Rupa and Sanatana? What are they doing, Rupa and Sanatana? Really? Really? Is that how they live, Rupa and Sanatana? Like that. Mm-hmm. Like that, the whole... We are remembering Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatana Goswamis. It says that a disappearance day is greatly celebrated, a disappearance day of a Vaishnava, because it is... Both the appearance and the disappearance, they are blessed times. Right? It is at that time that the blessings of that Vaishnava are present. It said that of the two, that the disappearance day is considered more important than the appearance day. And the reason is, because in the disappearance day, the Vaishnava is not only blessing that day by his appearance, but he has, because his life is completed, he has already fully displayed all his mercy. And ever the disappearance day is considered even more important than the appearance day. And in that way, this day is the disappearance day of Sanatana Goswami. And therefore the mercy available today is even greater than on his appearance day. So it is actually a very significant day. It is recommended that we pray to Rupa and Sanatana. Therefore, in the beginning, we began with Vande Rupa Sanatana, because that's exactly what it means to pray to the six Goswamis, because it is through them that we will attain the mercy. It is through them. It is by taking shelter of their teachings and directions. They are our authorities. They are our examples. They have set all the standards. And simply, that is how this movement will become thoroughly established, by studying these teachings and by distributing them. This is our business. This is our focus. If we want to become learned, then let us study Prabhupada's books. If we are still ready to study more, then let us study the books of these six Goswamis. Prabhupada said so in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Mantra Lila. He describes that. That would be very nice. Our Gopi Purana Dana Prabhu, I mentioned already earlier this week about him. But he dedicated his life to studying Sanskrit and being a translator and editor And his specific contribution is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is the book of Sanatana Goswami, which he translated and which was, you know, edited by BBT editors. So a very rich book, and really nice also, full of story, because it's a novel. So, you know, novels go down well. It's a novel, but like very systematically showing all different levels of spiritual realization to the topmost. I won't get into it tonight, but I will just give a plug, an advertisement. Brihad Bhagavatamrita, worth reading. Good stuff. Okay, any questions or comments before we have 5 more minutes, Kirtan?
You mentioned Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Can you mention a few of the other books that...
Why don't you mention some? Well, because you know also, you're the local, you know, and why should I mention it?
But maybe before, because I wanted to ask you something else as well. I'll mention books, but can you say something about the importance of devotees understanding our historical heritage and, you know, understanding what's gone before in the context of being preachers?
Well, you know, whatever the past is also present today. Right? That is the nature of history. History plays a part in today. And therefore it's very important to understand in what environment our tradition rose to the forefront, where the roots are of our tradition in the classical Vedic context, and how that how it grew and so on, because then we will be able to deal with our tradition and present it nicely to people. You know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a famous reference quite in the early parts of the first, of the very beginning of Bhagavatam, where in the commentaries, in Prabhupada's purports, it is mentioned that some people say that Bhagavatam was not written by Vyasadev, but that it was written much later by a scholar named Bopadev, right? You know about it, of course. You too. Anyway, you know, and then it says, no, we can, this is not true, because Srimad Bhagavatam is already referred to in the Matsya Purana, right? And in this way, you know, it's like it's a counter-argument, right? So, you know, I just read that, and I never thought that I would need that, right? But one day, you know, like I had a flat tire between Delhi and Vrindavan, and I'm standing next to the car, and one guy comes out of the forest, out of the bush, you know, and he just looks at me, and he snaps at me, and he says, "The Bhagavatam is written by Bopadev." You know? And I say, "No, it's not, because it's mentioned in the Matsya Purana already." So, you know, and I just like, bang, you know. He said it, and I just bang, straight back, and I thought, I could have never imagined ever need that, you know. I mean, I really thought, this I'm Pope, I'm never going to need this. But, you know, it came in really handy, right? So it's good to know your history, you know? It's good to know your history. Because some of that history is still alive, and we may be challenged, and we may meet people who from a smarter background who claim this is Vedic literature. But then, if you know something about smarter history, then you say, like, "Well, actually, you know, that's a particular group within the Vedic culture, but that's not predominant Vedic culture. Actually, in these areas of India, this smarter culture existed. These are some of the names of the families that are still representing, you know, But there are many other aspects of Vedic culture. They'll be standing there like, it's interesting. So history is interesting.
Yeah.
Like I'm also, I'm doing some research in this field. I'm at the moment, I'm working on different things. One thing I'm researching is when Islam actually entered, it went like a wave over Southeast Asia. You know, so little by little, it went, you know, and then you get like, for example, in East Bengal, you get a certain area gets taken over by Muslims, then it flips back to Hindu rule for another 40 years, and then it's Muslim again. Yeah. You see the same in Java, you see that a Hindu family, one prince becomes like a Muslim and begins to subjugate and conquer Java. It is conquered back by the Hindus and then again conquered back by Muslims. And so you see it going up and down. So I want to make like a chart, you know, which shows the whole dates and shows like how the wave went all over. And then next to it, I want to show how the dates of our movement, of our acharyas, and how it's a, it's like, for example, Advaita Acharya's grandfather was a minister in the Hindu government in the district of Bengal, in the Sylhet government area, in East Bengal. He was a minister. Later his grandfather, so that grandfather later moved to West Bengal, and then Advaita Acharya was staying in that ancestral home. So it's very close to our movements, just before, you know what I mean? So it's very interesting to see how I find it interesting because you can see that the Islam at that time was very thin. You know, it was the roots of it were very thin. It was sort of like a small... How many were there? I mean, a smaller group were present, and it's like a predominant Hindu culture. Then gradually the Muslim culture has risen more, but still there is just like a lot of Hindu culture mixed in. So, it's important to kind of get a perspective on these things. It's interesting. Yeah. Anyway, everyone has his sting. But Sanatana Goswami is relevant to us all. Mm. So which were the books?
Well, Haribhakta Das is very famous, of course. It's interesting you mentioned the Smarta tradition, because he wrote that book actually to silence the Smartas, actually. There were so many issues about how to worship and the dealings of the Vaishnavas and one another. The book was actually written this.
In the book, there's a verse that gives credit to Gopal Bhatta as the author. What do you think about that?
Well, he obviously did a lot of the background work, as you were saying. He didn't actually take much credit for himself. He supported the endeavor of the other Goswamis in so many ways. There's argument over who was the author of the book, but.
Yeah, but the it says that the concept of the book was Sanatana Goswami's. Therefore, he's counted as the author, because it was his concept, but Gopal Bhatta did a lot of work, a lot of work for it.
Okay.
That's what it's...
There's Digdarshan as well, which is a commentary on the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, especially. These are the two main ones, where Bhagavatamriti mentioned, which is actually a book for devotees. Probably saying this is a book for devotees. The devotee must read this book.
Mm. Comments?
Sri Krishna Lila story.
Yes.
What's that about?
Also, it's about the 10th chapter that Swami summarizes verses. And also the glorification of Lord Jagannath, of course, and a beautiful glorification of Bhagavatam.
There's a company that I think a publication company, something Harilal, I can't remember.
Harinam place?
No.
Oh, Rasbi Hari Lal.
Rasbi Hari Lal.
Okay, okay.
Can he read books by them?
Rasbi Hari Lal will publish anything. It's basically an Agarwal, right? It's Rasbi Hari Lal Agarwal. So Agarwal whenever there's profit to make, he will make it. So it's actually Ashok, who is the son who's managing the thing. Ashok's a nice guy. He's a real good businessman, so he'll print whatever makes money. So it's up to you to figure out which books are good and which ones are not good. It's not that it's all good, and it's not that it's all bad also. So therefore, all these books, you have to know which ones are the ones to read. Otherwise, if you just go there and say, well, let me buy some books, then you may buy some that you shouldn't, that are not bona fide. Yeah, there are all kinds of books that we don't accept as bona fide, that are rejected by our acharyas, as apa siddhanta, or not the right conclusions, what to do. So next time you want to buy your books there, to ask... ask any of us three and we'll tell you. They can bring some for us also.
So if they are...
I buy books there sometimes.
Okay. So if they're sold by devotees in temples in Mayapur, then it's fine?
Not always. Unfortunately not, because devotees, they also sometimes just buy the books and want to make some profit, and they also sometimes don't know what they're buying. So you have to know what you're buying. Otherwise, just read Prabhupada's books. Finally, I got him. The last one. God, I missed every time.
Maharaj, it was such a nice talk. Thank you very much.
Anyway, I hope it was a little interesting. Special Sanatan Goswami talk. But there's much, much more about Sanatan Goswami. Many places that are connected to Sanatan Goswami. There's a lot more we can say about his books, but 9 o'clock is 9 o'clock. So any question, otherwise we do 5 minutes more kirtan.